Man, I feel like weirdly confident that this isn't gonna be as much of like an ADHD clusterfuck as my normal episodes, but now that I'm looking at it and we're in front of this microphone, that confidence is waning somewhat. Or maybe not. I don't know. Fucking, we haven't done a RuneScape episode in 6 weeks, which I didn't realize.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I'm like playing this damn game.
Hello, and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
I am Logan.
And today's episode, I have been warned, is about the rune in RuneScape. But yeah. Other than that, I don't know what we're doing today.
We are indeed talking about the titular runes of RuneScape.
It is RuneScape, right? It's not runes, plural, cape, because I now realize that is also a viable name for this game.
Or is it, in fact, Run Escape?
Also viable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the Halloween version.
You can make a real solid argument for each one of those. don't let anyone get you to play this game. By the way, I'm gonna make you play this game eventually. It's gonna be great. You'll hate it. Okay, we're gonna jump in pretty quick here because I am determined to be semi-competent at one of these at least one time, which means I have to try until that happens. So
this is episode 21, far neither of us have succeeded.
Correct. Yeah. Oh man. Okay, how much have we talked about runes at all? I feel like we maybe haven't.
I don't think so. The only thing that I remember us talking about related to runes is specifically like rune plate as a decent armor set, but I don't think we've actually spoken really at all about runes in general.
Cool. Okay. I am glad you mentioned that, because those are two entirely different things with the same word in front of them.
Great. Okay. So we haven't spoken about runes at all then.
Yeah. So rune plate is made from runite ore, which is a rock that you see on the ground, and you hit it with a pickaxe, and then that gets smelted into bars just like you would with iron or steel. The runes themselves are used with the magic system. So instead of your like mana or spell slots, this is your consumable to cast spells, are runes.
Okay.
They're little stones. They're circular. They have a symbol on them. The symbol kind of determines what kind of magic is hiding inside the stone.
Okay.
Fortunately, they are weightless, and they also stack in your inventory, which means like you can have almost any number of them taking up exclusively one inventory slot per type of rune.
So the runes functionally in gameplay then are their ammunition, as opposed to, I think you brought it up in one of the past episodes, prayer points are things that continue to count up, right? Like that is just a mana resource of some variety that the character has to manage.
Yeah, I would say prayer functions like your standard video game magic system, where you are doing an action that takes a number of points away and a bar goes down, and then you drink a potion to make the bar go back up. Where the magic system, spells are split into a couple different spell books. You can only have one active at a time. We'll cover those kinds of things in a magic episode at some point. But you need runes to cast spells. And the runes have a specific type of magic energy in them. So you have your elemental runes, your earth, water, fire, and air. There are combination runes that you can go through a special process to make where you get two out of those four stacked into the same item, which is pretty handy. Just save some inventory spot. And then there are catalytic runes, and that's where stuff gets kind of interesting. I would further split the catalytic category into two subcategories. We're already doing this, aren't we? You have like your combat orientated runes. And then there's also some geared more towards utility. So
for crafting and things?
Yeah. So there's a nature rune, which has a little green squiggly on it. and that gets used in like smelting if you're using superheat item. So you're smelting iron or steel or some kind of ore in your inventory into bars. You can do that with magic instead of having to go to a furnace. That'll use a nature rune. The biggest use is probably for high alchemy. Consumes nature runes. It's got like a transformative sort of effect.
Okay.
Like you definitely get kind of like a, like all of these things sort of puzzle piece together. And then that'll determine what the spell actually does. Not dissimilar from the Magic the Gathering colors in a way.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke about dual lands earlier, but
yeah,
that tracks. Okay.
So yeah, you've got nature, you've got cosmic. Those are used for enchanting things, making your normal jewelry into enchanted jewelry. Law runes are used for teleportation.
Say telekinetic law?
Law, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll cover more in depth on those things when we get into like rune crafting and magic mechanics in an episode.
Okay.
And then to round out the rest of it are the combat runes, which are used to cast like your missile type spells. So, for instance, if we look at like, I don't know, let's pull up the normal spell book here, because that's probably the like easiest one. And we go to combat spells, and we're going to look at the fire spells, because that's what most people will be familiar with. Fire Strike takes 2 air runes, 3 fire runes, and 1 mind rune. So you're shooting a ball of fire through the air. So you got the fire, you got the air, and then the catalytic rune, the mind rune, is what makes it a spell that is a bolt of some kind.
That makes sense. That's more complex than I had expected. I would have just assumed the fire spells are fire runes and leave it at that. That's cool.
Yeah, and some of them are more restricted. I mean, any of the wind spells don't involve another element. There are fire spells that don't necessarily need air runes. There are various staffs and wands and other items that can change and manipulate the rune cost for spells. But it's definitely got this sort of math to it. And as you rank up and start using higher level spells, you need more runes, and then if we're looking at the combat spells, that catalytic rune changes. So if you use a chaos rune instead of a mind rune, that's up a tier in spells and higher damage.
Is there a D&D scaling to this? Like going from mind to chaos? Like, is that like fireball level 2 versus fireball level 1? Or is that a separate spell completely?
Technically, it's a separate spell completely. So you go fire strike, you get your strike spells, bolt spells, blast, wave, surge. I feel like that's all of them now. And each of those tiers, you have one spell for each element.
Okay. And those are probably distance related, right? Strike are like
damage.
Burning hands on
all,
touch.
All oh. of them are just shooting a ball of colored energy at an NPC, and then a sprite happens.
Amazing. Okay.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Keep in mind this used to run in JavaScript in your browser.
I do keep forgetting that.
Yep. And it's like original conception didn't even have a graphical, like any, I mean, very limited grid. Stay focused. I'm going to do this eventually. Okay. So we are going to now go through the history of runecrafting. Now that we have like a rough overview of why we need runes.
Yeah.
I will start out by saying that as I have dug into this, it's becoming more and more obvious that the RuneScape timeline is not entirely defensible from a lore standpoint. A lot of things don't necessarily mesh between gameplay and lore as tightly as maybe they would if you planned all this at the beginning. But I think they do a pretty good job for what it is.
So, that feels like growing pains of a game that's 20 plus years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit of suspension of disbelief is needed for some of this, especially the timeline. Once we get to the close to modern day, it gets not entirely believable in my mind. But first, we are going to start way back in the first or second age? Question mark? Little unclear.
Okay.
So we covered some of the original like history and creation of Gilenor in one of these episodes.
Yeah, in the Barrow Brothers episode.
Thank you. Okay. So we're going like way back to that. So if you recall, Guthix, our like god of balance, creates Gilenor, our world here that we're interacting with, and then brings in various species and races to populate said world.
Mm-hmm.
Guthix, I'm going to be a little shifty about some of these things. One of the most recent Grandmaster quest divulges some of this lore. I don't want to be too spoilery about that. And it's also not super important for where we're going to spend the bulk of the discussion today. So we're going to first or second age. Guthix is bringing people in. Guthix uses an artifact to give him power to do a lot of these things. That artifact also allows him to create like the concept of magic, it seems, on this plane.
Hmm.
Yeah, wild stuff. And then Guthix is the original provider of runes. Anytime anybody needed more runes, they needed to get them from God, which means they're like pretty valuable. You don't want to just sling them around willy-nilly.
So, I guess that leaves a couple of questions. So,
yep.
He is accessible until there's a certain point when he disappears, right?
Correct. Yeah. I got the vibe from reading some of these things, because a lot of this lore is coming from, like, in-universe texts, which are historians from, like, the last 100 to 200 years of Gilenor history, writing about what they think happened 5,000 years ago.
Okay.
So, there's, like, some built-in
unreliability.
Yeah. This whole thing to begin with. But I kind of get the vibe the dude peaced out because he was just sick of dealing with all this shit.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's literally the Amazon warehouse of magic powers, so I'd get kind of tired of it too.
Plus all the other, you know, godlike logistics that come with being a deity on this plane. So he eventually pieces out, and then we don't see much develop until, best guess seems to be towards the end of the first age, beginning of the second age, a Fremnik individual, who I don't believe we've talked about the Fremnik yet.
I don't think so.
They are, they are Norse. They live in the north. They have some real like Viking barbarian sort of vibes. A lot of their lore is rooted in Norse mythology. We will definitely do some episodes around the Fremnik at some point here as well. But I think that's probably enough to get this point across, at least. Eventually, one of these Fremnik. This is also the first group of humans in Gilenor, are the Fremnik. They are brought by Guthix himself. All humans currently in Gilenor are technically descendants from the original Fremnik tribe. They were originally nomads as well. Eventually, one of them finds an artifact, and he touches it, and it gives him, we're just going to say, superpowers, essentially.
Cool.
Dude becomes like, I'm just gonna throw a next gen reference at you. You don't know who Barkley is.
I do not know who Barkley is.
Yeah, Lieutenant Broccoli for our next gen viewers out there. He becomes Lieutenant Broccoli. Yeah. We don't know this individual's name. They're referred to only as V. I think their name might have 7 letters in it, although we're not entirely sure on that either. This person's name is lost to time. But they are like a great hero of the Fremnik, and in some ways maybe like a Promethean stand-in in a way here. Hmm. So this individual touches this artifact. They get a super brain, and they realize that the rocks in this cave have also been transformed by this artifact. And the rocks are now what we refer to as rune essence. These rocks can be mined. They can be taken to specific altars at very intentional locations. And there they can be imbued with the magic power of that altar, which is what turns a chunk of rune essence into a fire rune or into a chaos rune.
Okay. So the runes aren't inherently of their element. That is a thing that is bestowed upon them from prayer or something.
Correct. I would maybe think of them like little magical batteries.
Okay. That kind of brings up another question I had.
Yeah.
When you use a magic spell that yes. requires a rune, is that rune destroyed or is it just
it's
empty
gone
now?
It is consumed with by whatever process happens to cast that spell.
Okay. Hmm. Okay. They're also a finite resource then.
Yep. If you have 5 fire runes and a nature rune in your inventory, and you cast high level alchemy, which requires exactly those runes, they're all gone.
They're just gone.
You got nothing. Yep.
Okay. Okay. So it's a pretty big deal.
This
dude is able to find a way to make runes now that God has peaced out.
Mm-hmm. And the other, this is where like things get wishy-washy too, is in how runes and the various magical systems have interacted over the course of all 5 ages here. So the other like benefit of the runes is it seems to allow people who would not otherwise be able to cast spells to be able to do pretty great feats of magic. So you can train almost anybody to use runes and cast spells using those runes.
There's mm-hmm. inherent magic users also that don't require runes?
Kind of. It's a little... Yes and no. We'll say yes for sure. I'm not entirely positive if there are what we would consider humans at this point who can do that.
I see.
And I have been trying to answer this question all afternoon, and I have not found a satisfying conclusion. So our guy V here gets his super brain, figures out the concept of rune crafting, discovers the rune essence that needs to be mined to make this happen. This causes a bit of a rift in a bit. This causes a major rift in the like Fremnik society. So V becomes the first of the Moon Clan, which they establish. And these are the Fremnik who think magic is pretty dope and they should keep using it. The rest of the Fremnik, not stoked about the concept of magic. Quite anti-magic. Don't think anybody should be doing magic because this is like a Pandora's box sort of thing.
Okay. Huh.
So we get a whole schism in the Fremnik and we end up with 2 warring groups here. The Moon Clan and then just the standard Fremnik themselves. Everyone that goes with V and does the whole Moon Clan thing, they become inherent magic users. Not entirely sure on the process there. But these people are still hanging around. They live on Lunar Isle. You can go to Lunar Isle and these guys like float in the air. And are quite mystical beings just kind of on their own.
Are they the same people from the time of the schism, or has their lineage just carried on?
I don't know.
Okay.
It seems closer to the second one. But so the Moon Clan are none of the Fremnik are fan of outsiders. The Moon Clan may be chief amongst them. So they are on their own island. Eventually the rift between these two groups becomes so severe that the Fremnik kick them off the mainland and push them off to this island that most people don't even know exist. And if you do end up there, they make you leave immediately. And there's a whole quest series that goes into you being able to have some interaction on that island. That island is one of the only places where rune essence can be mined. The other mine, which I believe is the original, is the one that was found by V. And that is just somewhere in the frozen north. We'll fill in some of those pieces in a moment here.
Okay.
So before, well, the Moon Clan kind of descends down from the north and starts constructing. This is before like they're pushed off the mainland by the Fremnik. We're gonna rewind just slightly. The Moon Clan builds runic altars all across Gilinor. I'll send you a picture of one here, so you get an idea what these look like. Getting to a place that you can turn rune essence into a rune is like a two-step process. You have to go to this runic altar in Gilinor, which then transports you to a different place, and that's where you actually do the rune crafting itself.
So, is the different place a place that you could walk to, or is it in like ethereal place?
It is suspected that it is ethereal, although I don't know if I have a firm answer that it is. I can't tell you where you end up.
Okay.
From a gameplay standpoint, you definitely cannot walk to it.
Yeah, your instance somewhere.
Yeah, and it's not a thing you can reach on foot either. Your instance in gotcha. Like a way that you cannot get there. So here is kind of the entrance. To use the altar that is in Gilinor, to use that transportation method, you need to bring a talisman that corresponds to that altar. So if you want to get to the air altar, you need an air talisman. You tap the talisman on the rock teleports you to the air altar, and then you can turn your rune essence into air runes. And the altar looks like this. Pretty similar. Got kind of like a mystical gnome Stonehenge
vibe. That's a
vibe.
Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Stonehenge atop a Mott and Bailey.
And that the circular stone table in the center has the air symbol carved into it. And then the one will have the fire one carved into it. And this was probably a bad example because I don't know how you geographically show air in this game. But typically, the altar will be in a location that just like reeks vibes of whatever element or thing you're at. So like
the fire one is surrounded by lava.
Yeah, you're surrounded by lava. The cosmic one, there's like mystical, like Rainbow Ridge kind of bridges, Rainbow Road kind of bridges that you kind of walk across. The law, altar is on a special island of Intrana run by monks who are pacifists and like don't allow weapons onto the island, and it's all like very regimented. The death is not a great place to be. The blood altar's a nightmare hellscape as well. So it's what you would think.
Perfect.
And from what I have gathered today, the portion that's built in Gilinor is kind of like a locus of that element in our plane, and then they can build the altar there because it is a locus of that energy, and that's why the teleportation works. So they weren't able to just like build the air altar anywhere. They had to find a place where the air energy was already naturally being focused to make this link.
That makes sense. I feel like that falls into like normal depictions of like ley lines and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I get that.
Yeah. And there is another plane of existence called the Abyss. It's not clear to me the exact relationship between where these altars are located and the Abyss. We'll get into some of that in a bit here, because the Zamorakian mages are now using the Abyss to travel to these altars as well. So the standard route is not the only way in. There are other like interdimensional hopscotch things you can do to get to places to make runes.
So, yeah, you can travel through the warp. I get it.
Yeah, and there's also, like, one of these altars is also in Zanaris, which is where all of the fairies live. I don't think we've touched that at all, but that is on the moon. So
we have not touched that. I feel like I would remember if you could go to the moon.
You can go to the moon. There's a whole mafia thing going on with the fairies. You don't even necessarily know it's the moon. Yeah, well, topic for another show. So V and the Moon Clan make all of these altars. They're cranking out runes. Things are going great for them. We get up to dawn of the Fifth Age. We make the transition from age 4 to age 5 when humans start to figure out how to do rune crafting as well. So for a very long time, the only people who had this knowledge were exclusively the Moon Clan.
Okay, and were they just living their normal lives, having a grand old time with their magical runes, or are they like the new leaders of Gilanor?
They're just vibing out on Lunar Isle with Baba Yaga and her giant chicken house. Like, actually, that's what's happening.
Baba Yaga is also on Moon Island.
Yeah, she runs a shop where you can buy runes. It's actually pretty important for Iron Man. And it is in a house that bounces around on chicken legs.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, the Moon Clan are a vibe, for sure.
Yeah.
So humans start to figure out how to craft runes. And the Fremnik are not a fan of this at all. And thus begin the Runecrafting Crusades.
What a good name.
Right? So, Fifth Age, humans first start finding runes. That's like our year one of the Fifth Age. Year 42. So not crazy long later is the beginning of the Runecrafting Crusades. And here is where we are going to start to hit the timeline that, like, is going to make no sense to you if you've played a lot of RuneScape and not paid much attention to the lore, or if you even have paid a lot of attention to the lore, still might not make a lot of sense. The game has the same, I think they have the same issue that a lot of like post-apocalyptic sort of media has, where you're like, you guys had, like, what do you mean no one knows about the Force or the Jedi? You killed all of them like 4 days ago, and now no one's talking about it. This doesn't make any sense at all. Like, people would know what the Republic was, but yeah, same kind of issue, where you're just like, it's been 10 years, why does no one understand anything? So we hit year 42. The Fremnex sweep down out of the north and are hell-bent on eliminating magic from existence, basically. So they are tearing through human settlements and just smashing up every altar they can find. Which is why, if you look at that first picture I sent you, Feg looks pretty busted up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This war lasts 20 years between the Fremnik and basically everyone else. At the dawn of the Fifth Age, as humans were incorporating magic and starting to do runecrafting, we saw the foundation of the Order of Wizards and the Wizard's Tower. We have talked about the Wizard's Tower slightly.
Yes.
It is just south of Draenor.
Yep. Yeah.
That is the like first conclave that exists of magic study under humanity. So you see wizards from every sect showing up there. This is post God Wars, so we have followers of Sarah Doman and Zamorak about, and they are feuding. But they do work together in this tower because it's important that humans figure out how to do magic so they stop getting eaten by bears and killed by goblins.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly deal with the vampires.
Yeah. So we also at the same, shortly after the tower is built, the mage training arena is constructed. That's a facility. Let's see. It'll be northeast of Lumbridge, southeast of Falador, and north of Alcarid, or for those okay. with some RuneScape geography in their head.
I recognize two of those names.
Yeah. Alcarid, I don't think we've talked about. We'll get there eventually. The Mage Training Arena, I fucking hate that place. It's the worst. They reworked it recently, and it seems to suck less, but we'll see. Either way, that was built because when you're testing out spells, sometimes things go pear-shaped and everyone dies. So they were like, hey, maybe you guys should do that, like, out in the middle somewhere of nowhere else. Instead of downtown. Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah. So as this war is progressing, we get the Fremniks moving their way through most of the Gilenor that people will be familiar with, smashing everything up. And then kind of another fun thing is there are also other humans who are upset about the sudden increase in magic users in humanity. And mainly the people who are really good at like martial combat. Your rangers and your swordsmen are not stoked that the combat triangle has a third point. So they band together and they go smash the Mage Training Arena by themselves. That's not even
great.
The Fremnik that do that. That's just a bunch of archers who are pissed off that there's wizards now.
Great.
Which I think is pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's real fun.
So we get Gunnar is the Fremnik chieftain who is leading the crusade. There's forces split into two. One group moves north, the other group moves south. The southern group accidentally rediscovers the Wrath Altar, which is the like final tier of combat spell. Those are the things that slap extra hard. They rediscover it. Humans rebuild around it and start to make Wrath runes, and then eventually that all gets smashed as well. That site is now the location of the Myth Guild, made by the Sect of Uld. We will talk about those in another episode as well.
Is it the Myth Guild?
Myth, yeah. M-Y-T-H-S apostrophe.
Oh,
so like okay. Yeah. Those who are myths, this is their guild.
That's cool.
And this is the final evolution of once you beat Dragon Slayer 2. You get access to this. So once you kind of like beat one of the main plot lines in the game, you rank up to myth status from hero, legend, myth. Those are your three adventuring guilds in order.
That checks out.
So the Southern Force rediscovers the Wrath Altar conflict. That kind of changes hands a few times, gets rebuilt, gets destroyed. Basically a cult builds a guild on top of the site and protects it, and we'll continue that plot line in a different episode. But they manage, because of the discovery of the Wrath Altar, the Sect of Uld is able to just crush the Gunnites in the south. Like, unlocking that next tier of magic meant that they were able to just wipe them off the map.
Yeah, they just tech leveled up and took them out.
Exactly. So that leaves us with just the Force in the north. They eventually sort of stall out from like a campaign standpoint. They pause just outside the city of Varrok with the intent to sort of regroup, gather forces, resupply, and continue the rampage. But instead, they just sort of peter out and settle there. And there is now a barbarian village outside of Varrok, in between Varrok and Falador, that is directly descended from the Gunnites who were rampaging through the north. So eventually, things kind of calm down, but now no one really knows how to do the rune crafting again, because all the things are broken, a bunch of people are dead, everything's gone tits up.
Yeah, this sounds a lot like a Visigoth sacking Rome kind of thing.
Very much.
Yeah. Okay.
The Wizard's Tower is still operational at this point. We're like, let's see, this ends in 62-ish of the Fifth Age, the war. So the Wizard's Tower starts work on, you know, being able to continue doing wizard stuff. At this point, getting to the rune essence mine is, I believe, an on-foot scenario. And there are very few people who know where the rune essence mine is at all. Because the idea is that if too many people know how to make runes, then it's no longer an advantage that humanity has over the other species of Gilinor. So this knowledge is kept really tight. So there is considerable study gone into how do we sort of make this process a little bit easier. And here's where we're going to get into some more fuzziness that I think is actually really fun. The Wizard's Tower burns down in the year 70. Even reading through... It burns down. It depends who you ask if it was on purpose. After it burns down, the Ceridoman mages at the Wizard's Tower, who were like kind of run, they run the Wizard's Tower. They just tolerate the Zamorakian mages because everyone's, you know, we're like doing a CERN, essentially.
Yeah.
This is the International Space Station, but for magic. They immediately blame the Zamorakian mages and say that the Zamorakians intentionally burned down the Wizard's Tower. If you ask the Zamorakian mages, they recently discovered a teleportation method that allows you to teleport directly to the rune essence mine, bypassing both the travel time and the dangers in getting there, because it was not an easy place to get to. And their position is that they discovered this spell. That spell was then stolen from them by the Ceridoman mages, who didn't really know how to use it, and in the process of trying to use it, burned down the tower by doing unwieldy magic. So there's conflicting information, and depending on which Wikipedia page you read, wiki article you read, it is positioned as like kind of a both sides thing, or sometimes it's straight up one or the other. I don't know if we're supposed to have an idea of which point of view is correct.
That's cool.
What I will say is what happens immediately after the Wizard's Tower burns. All of that knowledge is lost. The spell is lost. And then people go a little nuts and start just murdering Zamorakians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Because they were blamed for the... Yep. So if we go over to Varrok... let's see. I'm going to find you this quote. The act was followed by a massive backlash against Zamorakian followers who had been tolerated, if not exactly welcomed, prior to the destruction of the Wizard's Tower. A number of holy crusades by Ceridoman followers, such as the White Knights of Falador, were waged against all those suspected to hold Zamorakian beliefs.
Cool. So you have a crusade for people who learn how to use forbidden magic, and then those people work together for less than 100 years, and then they burn down the Wizard Tower and do some good old crusading themselves. Good job, everybody.
Yeah. Well done. And there's a whole group of underground Zamorakian wizards in Varrok called the Dagonhai. They're somewhere between a sect and a cult. We'll cover them in a future episode as well. But things do not go well for them either. It sounds bad. Like there is definitely a reading of all of these things that the Zamorakians are not the bad guys. And I don't know how true to the original like authorial intent that is. But it is definitely wishy-washy now.
How far away is modern day from these events?
Not far enough, in my opinion. Year is like 169, 170.
Oh, okay. So like 100 about years. 100 years.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's, Wizard's Tower burns.
That's not a lot of time.
That's not a lot of time, is it? That's not a lot of time for no one to know anything. So you don't know this, but one of the very first quests you do in RuneScape 2, or old school RuneScape, is Rune Mysteries, it's called. And you go to, I think it starts with Duke Horatio in Lumbridge, where the game starts. And he gives you a little package, and you take that, and you go over to the now rebuilt Wizard's Tower. You talk to the head wizard there, he gives you another package, You go talk to the guy who owns the rune shop in Varrok, and wham bam, they have refigured out how to teleport to the rune essence mine.
By what you did?
Mostly by what you Sherpa'd back and forth a
you
few
delivered.
Times. Yeah, you delivered. It is like pretty stereotypical fetch quest. This is something you can do incredibly early in the game and should do incredibly early in the game, typically. You're basically just walking back and forth between a few very important areas. Like, it's just a introduce you to the map sort of quest.
Yeah.
But it also is the rediscovery of humanity's ability to craft runes at scale.
Yeah, that's wild. That's just like a
yeah.
real basic fetch quest. Here you go.
Yep. And like before that, you are punching goblins who are just dumping fire runes on the ground as you're beating them into the dirt. So you get like a lot of dialogue options about how these things are really rare and like no one really understands it, but they're everywhere. And like the thing Duke Horatio gives you to take to the wizarding tower to go talk to Ciridor is one of the talismans. And they're talking like it's an air talisman, and they're talking about like many Bothans died to get us this air talisman kind of thing. And those things are just littering the ground as well. So that's where some of the disbelief, I think, kind of comes in.
Yeah, that's fair. You still have to have an MMO at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and it like controls the magic system, so it's important
kind
those
of
things
important.
Aren't impossible to find if you expect people to do murder magic in your game all the time.
Are you able to go to the altar and use the air talisman before doing that quest?
I don't know. I don't know what happens.
Like, can you as a player rediscover how to do that before the world has?
Think so. I feel like you'll get like a very video game, you know, you can't do that right now kind of thing.
That would make sense.
Let's pull up the Rune Mysteries quest guide and see what it says. Doesn't tell me. And like the other weird thing is like Aubrey, the guy who runs the rune shop involved in this quest, he is also the NPC that gives out the rune crafting cape when you hit 99 rune crafting. But like he's wearing it, so he has 99 rune crafting. I don't know how this guy got 99 rune crafting before we knew how rune crafting worked. But he's wearing the cape. He's wearing the cape.
It's an artifact.
If you ask him about the cape, he says this cape is for super cool people who have 99 rune crafting.
No further details.
After you just did the like level 2 quest to teach this man about rune crafting. He's like, by the way, 13 million rune crafting XP right here. Did it last week while you weren't looking.
Hang on. Is he wearing the cape?
Yes.
When you drop off the package?
Yes. He's wearing the cape before you get there.
I don't know. I'm starting to think that maybe this whole economy for capes is all a sham.
And like all of the other cape dispensers are in the profession that they should be. So is this guy. He runs a rune shop. This man also is one of the people who can teleport you to the rune essence mine. Once that spell is discovered, there's only, I think, 6 NPCs, maybe, who can send you to the rune essence mine, maybe less. Aubrey's backstory, unclear. Maybe he is an evil deity in disguise. That would not be a new thing.
He just found a really cool cape, and he's like, oh, this cape? Well, it's because I'm really cool, actually, is why I have it.
Yeah, maybe he killed the Jedi and took his lightsaber.
Exactly. He's got 6 of them in there.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that brings us to, lore-wise, at least where we are at modern day with runecrafting in-universe. So I said to you earlier that like this has shifted my perspective a fair bit on some of the things in-game. Like all of the major settlements that you see in-game are less than 200 years old. Because those settlements only came to exist because humanity was able to harvest the power of runecrafting, stockpile enough runes to defend themselves to create these cities.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know if that's just like my brain has baked in like castle equals very old, and I just didn't think about it past that, but I had the impression before researching this episode that like the time scale between rune crafting as a knowledge form disappearing and the start of the game, that there was a considerable amount of distance there. And it's really 170 years at most, 100 years, depending on how you want to count it.
Yeah, I mean, especially with a game that has five ages, right? Like, there are plenty of beings that can do magic of some variety, I'm sure, but having one of those races only discover it within 200 years is pretty wild.
And prior to that, humans were, like, very low on the ladder. Most of the time we skipped over is, like, all of the God Wars drama. So you're Zamorak betraying Zeros and ascending to godhood himself, and then Ceridoman and Zamorak fighting each other and blowing up half the planet and creating the wilderness and all of the nastiness and Mauritania. Like, all of the early stuff we talked about in the Barrows episode, we basically just jumped over all that time in this one.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, 200 years is not a lot of time, especially for some of this stuff. I wonder also, if that is just like an odd... I feel like RuneScape is not like a incredibly rich with NPCs. Kind of, like, you don't walk into the city and you are bombarded with 50 to 100 NPCs in locations, no. Are you?
No.
Yeah. I wonder if that's like a population thing too. Like, I'm sure you could backwards read into it that like these places are not populated very well because this town was demolished 100 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a reading of it. Yeah, I think it makes a little bit more sense if you map maybe rune crafting to like our Industrial Revolution.
Hmm. Yeah.
But it would also be kind of, well, I guess we have like your aqueducts, sort of. Like, there was a fair amount of technology lost when the Roman Empire fell that we did not rediscover for some time. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool. Is the cape any good?
By what metric? Like visually cool? Or mechanically? I think it's kind of just bad. By most metrics, it's not one of the better capes.
Does this one have a fun name related to a food? I think we got pizza cape last time.
Oh, we got pizza cape. Yeah, with the fire cape. Now the level 99 capes are typically just referred to by their skill. Mm. So the runecrafting cape does replace the need to have a talisman to enter a runecrafting altar, which, once you have 99 runecrafting, you're not doing any more runecrafting, because it's... We've not talked about the mechanics of runecrafting, but it is consistently at the top of the list of people's least favorite skills to mess with.
Okay.
It is top one or two, probably, for cool. Most painful. It is slow. It is so slow. And when we do the mechanics episode, we'll talk about all of the weird social interactions that transpire to get people to get fast XP rates that they can't attain by themselves. And we'll discuss my early moneymaker as a little boy running essence to a man on Entrana so he could craft lotteries faster.
Okay. That sounds great. So yeah, I guess that probably answers my next question. You do not have a runecraft cape?
Absolutely not. I am... Yeah, okay. So the... Like, a lot of the skills, there's not a reason... Like, there's not, like, a functional reason to hit level 99. Runecrafting, level 91 is a frequent target. You get double nature runes then. So every essence, you get two nature runes. But you need level 91 for one of the achievement diary steps for the island of Karamja. You can boost to it starting at level 86. You can get a +5 boost, although it's kind of a pain. So, like, the lowest level you need in runecrafting to kind of do all of the things in the game would be 86 with a +5 boost. I am currently okay. Level 85.
So next year?
Probably before winter. If I keep playing, honestly, I'm only like 200 XP away, and I've now unlocked blood runecrafting, which is a pretty AFK. Like, it's a thing you can do while washing the dishes, and it won't slow you down much. Sort of AFK.
Okay.
At like, you know, 20k XP an hour, and I probably have another 10 or 12 hours of that before I hit level 86.
Oh my god.
And again, 92 is halfway to 99, so...
Yeah, right. That's...
Yep. Yep.
Ugh.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Gross.
Yeah. So yeah, there's our... I don't know if we call this a part one or what we call this, but that is...
Our episode on rune crafting.
On rune crafting lore specifically, and virtually none of the mechanistic weirdness that comes from a skill that caps out at like 40k an hour.
Yeah, now I'm curious about you being a water boy for other folks, but we will get into that later, I guess.
Yeah, that'll be a fun tale. I told you I was determined to not make this thing a two-parter, and I feel like I have managed it.
You have done commendable work here.
And yeah, we have some other tendrils to trace down later. We can go into the artifact that was used by Guthix and V to kind of start this whole ball rolling.
Ooh, is it the same artifact?
Yes, it is the same artifact. There are three locations in Gilinor that are functional rune essence mines, and that artifact has spent time at all three of them. One of them is in Mauritania, and it's the vampires run a slave mining camp to mine the Daedalus essence there.
Great.
Yeah.
That's good vampire stuff there.
Yep. Just doing vampire stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, so we could definitely do that. That artifact is called the Stone of Joss, or the Eye of Ceradomin, however you want to go with that. The Fist of Guthix. There's one other name for it. Primus is the final.
Hell yeah.
Is the final name for it. So we got some tendrils there. We could spend some time on Lunar Isle dealing with the Moon Clan or the Fremnik, or there was another schism amongst the Fremnik, and there's a whole mountain tribe that have a whole quest line you go down. We've got the Dagonhide Zamorakian mages, who are like the underground Zamorakian sect in Varrok that got massacred and disappeared and have not been heard from for 100 years. Yeah.
There's the fairy mafia
and the fairy mafia. Guild. Yep. Yep. So yeah, I think we'll
all right.
We've dangled enough threads.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Yeah, I think we will revisit almost all of those, because there's some good stuff there.
It's a weird game.
I'm getting closer and closer to playing it, but it's like closer from me walking to Europe. So, you know, step by step we're getting there, but it's gonna be a trek still.
So I have not caught up on all of the news yet, because I cycle off this game for many months at a time. Like, I don't think I've been playing RuneScape for like the last 8 months. But recently, they have announced plans to do another league, which would be maybe an okay time to try playing the game, because it has accelerated XP rates. But there is also a plan to, at some point, have official private servers available, where you get to set XP rates and everything yourself.
That does feel like my speed.
Yeah, so maybe we have, like, a private codex server at some point with like 5x XP rates or something. So there's like some of the grind. I think the grind is definitely important to the character of the game. I don't think there should be zero grind, but I'm not gonna ask you to like run on rooftops for 50 hours to get to like level 45 agility.
I will not be crafting blood runes while I wash the dishes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to keep doing that, but I don't think anyone else should. So maybe we put a pin in that until we can craft our own version of Gilinor to explore.
I like it. Let's do that. All right. I think that that is an episode. We did it.
Yeah.
If you like the show, please tell a friend, rate or review us on podcast player of choice. We don't advertise the show at all because every podcast I listen to say that it's a racket. So we don't do that. We just trust them to tell us what to do. They do say telling a friend helps though. So, you know, here we are asking you to do the same. GordonHamburger.com is the site to go where you can read reviews. You can see links to videos on YouTube. We are sometimes streaming. We haven't done that in a while, but we're getting around to it.
Yeah.
There's also a contact tab on the page there. So if you want to recommend a piece of world building that we dig into, or just want to say hi, you can do that. Our music is done by our very good friend, Nicholas Cahill. Links to his SoundCloud is in the show description. And I have been Phil.
I'm Logan.
And, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another Codex entry. Thanks.
Oh, God, there was a thing I told Catherine earlier I was going to try to mention this, and I didn't, so now I'm just shoehorning it in at the end here.
Uh-huh.
Where did I have this? Okay, so the Runecrafting Crusades, that was year 42 to 62 of the Fifth mm-hmm. Age. Wizard Tower burns down year 70. Rune mm-hmm. Mysteries, the quest the player does, happens year 169, 170. I'm going to read you a sentence about the year 132, and I will mostly refuse to elaborate.
Okay.
During the year 132, King Arthur and his knights arrive in Gilinor and will remain there until England needs their aid again.
Fuck. Okay. Is there any other details about that?
I mean, there's an entire quest line of you palling around with the Knights of the Round Table.
We might... I know we threaten this every once in a while about doing a theme month or something, but yeah. We might have to do a King Arthur month.
There is Camelot Castle is one of your normal spellbook teleport locations. It's a pretty memorable area for a lot of people. Yeah, there's, I don't know, maybe five quests. So like you
wait. Is it actual Camelot?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's there.
This is how you get me to play this game.
Yeah, there's I'm trying to remember. I mean, the White Knights of Falador tie in a bit. Merlin exists.
Great.
There's some shenanigan where Merlin is locked in a crystal and you need to go mess with Morgan Le Fay to get him out of the crystal. There's a whole stowing away on a ship thing. I remember something about a black candle. It's a little fuzzy, but
okay.
Yeah, there's a...
Are there named knights?
All of them. All of them are there. You even, like, not even just the A tier. Like, they're... Let's see here. I'll click on the Camelot page. Arthur, Kay, Bedivere, Pelias, Tristram, Gawain, Lancelot, Percival, Galahad, Mordred shows up. Yeah.
Oh, they're playing so fast and loose with Arthur legend.
Yeah.
How does Mordred show up when Lancelot is there? Is Guinevere there?
No. There's a lady of the lake. There might be multiple ladies of multiple lakes, now that I'm rethinking a couple other quests, like unrelated. There's a lake deity near the Fremnik that if you have an enchanted lyre that is used for teleportation, this lady will take raw fish from you to recharge your lyre.
That's no Arthur legend I know, but no.
It is a lady in a lake you go talk to, and you hand her raw sharks, and she makes your magical lyre slightly more magical.
Juices up your guitar. Love it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, we might have to do a King Arthur thing, because... I have too many King Arthur things just waiting in the wings.
Yeah, there's I think you go to the Fisher Realm. You go to the Fisher Realm. Galahad isn't in Camelot anymore. He's like hanging out by the coal mine, I think. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a whole thing happening. There's like the White Knights. I don't think we've gotten into there. We have to do something with the White Knights now that we know they like led a pogrom against the Zamorakians after the Wizard's Tower burned down. You do a lot of work for the White Knights, and now I need to read through some of that and see if I can like headcanon it to be sinister in some way.
Yeah, maybe they're not so unblemished white with some of their past shenanigans.
Or the Zamorakians are just evil dudes doing evil stuff.
I hear both sides have wonderful people, so.
Yeah,